Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Freedom of Species would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast today. We pay our respect to the elders of all of the lands on which we meet across Australia.
Welcome to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM. I'm Betty Mallon, and I'm here in the studio today with Trev.
Hey, everyone.
So last time I was on here, I was talking about the history of the Australian wool industry, specifically in the 1700s. And that's a little bit of a series that I'm working on. But as you can imagine, it takes me a while to get all that info together. So not doing 1800s today, that's going to be coming up soon. So today we're going to be talking about an experience I had recently meeting some rescued dingoes.
Right.
Yeah. So
this is sort of like a bit of a slower paced show, or a bit of a, like a, what's it called? Like a break almost from your ongoing.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit more of a casual off the cuff show
casual's
than
the word.
My usual historical epics. yeah. So people might remember that back in May of this year on Freedom of Species, I interviewed Alex Livingstone from the organisation Defend the Wild, along with Sonia Takau, who is a Dhirubal Rainforest Aboriginal woman and the director of the organisation Dingo Culture. So both Sonia and Alex have done a lot of work in advocating for the native dingo.
Yeah.
So I recommend going back to listen to that one if you want to know more about dingoes, because those guys are the experts.
It was mid-May, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in the middle of May, and it was called Dingo Talks with Sonia and Alex.
Yeah.
Yeah. So recently I actually went on a trip up to New South Wales, and one of the people that I visited was Alex. And Alex's partner, Zef, who is a professional dog trainer, actually. So both Alex and Zef have adopted rescued dingoes. And so they have 5 adult dingoes there, as well as 3 dogs, large breeds of dogs. There was a German Shepherd, a Mastiff, and like a Heeler, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the story with these dingoes is all of them are wild-born dingoes whose parents basically got shot.
Oh,
and then
shit.
Somebody rescued the puppies so they can live out their lives. So they were also fostering 4 dingo puppies.
Do you know how old they are when they're normally adopted? Like how old the dingoes might be?
Well, the dingoes right now are about 12 weeks old.
That's so young still.
Yeah. But their mother was shot like about 2 months ago, so they might have been like
only four weeks old.
I'm not sure of the exact dates, and I also think the rescuers weren't exactly sure how old they were when they came.
Yeah.
But, you know, how old are they when they go to rescue? I mean, it depends when their parent was killed, right?
I was also wondering, like, maybe how long they stay with their parent in that more fragile, you know, dependent state, and when they sort of...
I do know that when they first came into the care of this rescue, they had to be bottle fed. So they were definitely still drinking milk at that point. So, yeah, the story is that a farmer shot the mother and the puppies were going to be drowned.
Fuck.
Yeah, but a neighbor intervened.
Wow.
Yeah, apparently the neighbor was a bit of a dingo enthusiast and already, like, had a dingo. Right. So the neighbor adopted one of the dingo puppies and then contacted a rescue to take the rest.
Wow.
So basically Alex and Zef were fostering these 4 dingo puppies.
Yeah.
So the names of the puppies were River, Rain, Brook, and Creek. So, and I think the one that got adopted was called Tide. So okay. They've all got water names. And the reason for that is because dingoes are actually water finders. That's kind of their thing.
Oh.
They can find bodies of water like in the desert, rivers, or inland lakes. And I believe there's some stories of like early European explorers actually being able to survive because they followed dingoes to water.
To water. Wow.
So that's why they have their water names.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that about dingoes.
Yeah. So there's a few complications when you rescue dingoes, because basically once a dingo has been taken out of the wild, they can't go back.
Oh, right. At all.
It's actually illegal. But even if it was legal, I think it would be very difficult for them to go back and kind of survive as wild dingoes.
Yeah.
So when these puppies have been taken in, they have to be de-sexed and go to homes, be adopted into loving homes, basically.
Yeah.
And it's really sad that their genetics has been removed from the environment, but that happened when their mother was shot. You know what I mean? They were sort of like ecologically dead once their mother was shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically the point of rescuing them is to preserve the lives of these individuals. It's not to breed them.
Yeah, and not to put them back in the environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there is a bit of captive dingo breeding that goes on, but, you know, it's not great. It has a lot of the same problems as dog breeding, right?
Mm.
Like, what are we going to do with these dingoes that we breed? They have to go to homes, and those are homes that could be for rescued dingoes, right, rather than captive bred ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why these dingoes are needing homes. And I believe that there's still two of them up for adoption right now, last I heard. So I learned a lot about dingoes and dogs from this experience. So I'll rehash again. The place I was staying, there was 5 adult dingoes, 3 adult dogs, 4 dingo puppies, and 1 very brave and chill cat.
So the adult dingoes are sort of permanent residents there? They're not up for adoption?
They're not up for adoption. So like Zeph and Alex have adopted those ones themselves.
Yeah.
So there's a big difference between dingoes and dogs. And hanging out with dingoes kind of made me realize just how domesticated dogs are.
Yeah, right.
Because dogs have been selected over probably thousands of years to be quite friendly towards humans.
Yeah.
But dingoes aren't like that. Dingoes are very suspicious of strangers.
Yeah.
So when I got to the house, like the puppies are different because they're puppies, so they're happy with anyone.
Right.
But the adults, the instructions that I was given when I got there is like, don't make eye contact, just ignore them, don't smile with your teeth because that can be maybe a threatening thing for the adult dingoes.
Like growling, sort of. It looks like growling in a
yeah,
way.
Or yeah, or it looks like your teeth. A threat of some kind, I guess. So, you know, I just ignored the dingoes. And about like 2 or 3 days into me staying there, one of the dingoes allowed me a pat. And I was like, whoa, okay, I'm being finally let into the pack. So I was just sitting on the couch and this dingo's name was Edna. She came and sat next to me and I was like, oh my God, what do I do? Can I pat her now? And they were like, this is Zeph and Alex. They were like, yeah, you can give her a pat maybe on the chest or the collarbone because she can see your hand and she can't reach that spot herself. So it feels good for her, right? So I gave her a pat and then she kind of bowed her head to me. And they were like, she's offering her head to you for a pat. So I gave her a little pat behind the ear. And then me and Edna chilled together for a bit. I was very happy about that.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So one thing on that, like some listeners might know that myself and my partner, Davida, we foster dogs. And our most recent foster is Casper, who is a husky. And I think Casper was actually with us during the interview that we did with Alex.
Yeah, that's right.
For the dingo, that's right.
Casper was in the studio that day.
And it's just funny hearing you say everything you just said about the dingoes because Casper is so similar. Like when we have to try and get strangers to, you know, be around Casper, we say the same thing. We say, ignore him, pretend he's not there, basically pretend he's a ghost. Like, don't look at him, don't make direct eye contact, don't bare your teeth, don't smile, don't laugh so that it, you know, shows your teeth. Just look away and let him sniff you and inspect you and just pretend he's not even there. And then when we do get to the stage where they can have a pat, the first place is always under his neck on his chest. And that's always the most comfortable spot for him to get a pat. So everything you just said about your first experience getting close to a dingo, I guess, like you know, actually like having a proper sort of relationship starting, was exactly the same as what we had to do with Casper as a husky.
Yeah. And so interesting.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder if huskies are like closer related to wolves than maybe some other dog breed.
Yeah.
They certainly look like they are.
Or closer to a wild animal than a domesticated animal.
Yeah. So
in their genetics somewhere along, like they're not as domesticated genetically. Because a lot of, sort of like you mentioned it before, I guess, like there's a difference between, you know, an animal being domesticated like within their environment, but also genetically. Like I think like you said, like once you selectively breed an animal over thousands of years, they're going to be more domesticated. But then as you said, like the dingo pups are going to be easier to be around than the adults because they're also, maybe not domesticated is the right word, but they're not as wild yet because they're still young and they haven't had that experience.
Yeah, I think that puppies just generally have more needs than the adults. So these adults, they actually had a similar story. They were also rescued as puppies because right. their parents were shot. So they have been domesticated since they were puppies, but they haven't got that domesticated breeding.
Yeah.
Right?
So yeah. I think maybe Casper's similar in that, like, he's a little bit closer to a wild animal, but has been brought up obviously in captivity. So they're not like a wild animal, but they've got that. And I don't know, I'm not an expert on dogs, but it just yeah. seems to me that huskies, or some huskies anyway, are a bit closer to a wolf. Like yeah. they look very close to a wolf and they just act a lot more similar to wolves than other dogs. And there's definitely a difference between huskies and those sort of, you know, wolf style dogs compared to the more typical domesticated breeds that you see out and about a lot. So yeah, it sounds like there's a few parallels between maybe dingoes, because did dingoes, are they related to wolves from Asia or from
yeah, they are going way back. So I think it would be fair to say that domestic dogs and dingoes have a common canine yeah. ancestor. But dingoes have been physically separated for a long time from yeah. domestic dogs. Actually, I was just thinking in terms of this dogs being bred to be friendly. Several months ago, me and Meg did a show about riot dogs.
I heard that one.
Yeah, you listened to that. You know about like dogs living in places like South America. And in those cases, so those are domesticated dogs that have sort of become feral.
Yeah.
But they have a preference to be in human spaces. They tend to live in cities. And a big difference with the dingoes is they won't go into the cities. They live out in the bush. That's where they can survive.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how you know whether someone is a dingo or a domestic dog, is can they survive in the wild on their own? Because domestic dogs can't, and they probably won't. They will just try to be in human spaces, try to scavenge off humans.
Yeah.
But dingoes, they know how to live out there.
Right.
Yeah. So after my first experience giving Edna a little head pat, I kind of made the mistake of thinking like, oh, we're cool now and I can just pat her. Oh no, I was wrong. So one time I tried to, like later that night, I tried to just pat Edna when she was just sitting by herself. Like she's making eye contact with me. So I thought we were cool. And she got really like pissed at me. She started barking and growling at me. And then she was annoyed at me for the rest of the night. Like, how dare you just come and pat me? But we recovered the next day. It was fine.
Even that is pretty similar to with Casper. Like, because with Casper as a husky, like every day it's almost like a new day, like a new slate. You've got to like prove yourself again that you're doing things according to the rules and that you're not, you know, if you do something wrong or if you do something a bit too much that he's not expecting, it's like, nah, you're in the bad books.
Yeah.
You pushed my boundary without asking. I'm going to growl at you. So yeah, it's not like a normal dog where like once you become friends, you feel
they
like,
they don't
hold
a grudge, right? Yeah. Like a normal domestic dog will just forgive you no matter what, which kind of makes them quite vulnerable in a way, right?
Yeah.
But like you can't dominate a dingo, and sounds like you can't dominate a husky either. You just got to build that trust and relationship with them,
and
right?
It's very slow and it can be like, not broken, but it can get set back very easily, and you sort of have to go back from scratch for that day or that week or whatever and build it up again.
Yeah. So I learned a lot about dog training, especially through Zeph. Zeph is just a wealth of knowledge about this stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a few things that when you think about it, it sounds kind of obvious. So one day we were kind of, you know, standing around in the backyard and Edna came and sat next to me. So I thought, okay, like going to give Edna a pat. And the advice that Zeph gave me was like, leave it on a good note, like stop patting her when she still wants it.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of playing hard to get a little bit with the dingo. So that way you're not like overwhelming her and she'll get sick of the patting. You leave it on a good note and she remembers like a nice interaction with you.
Leave her wanting more. Don't make it so that she says no.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, full disclaimer here, I've actually never been responsible for an animal myself as an adult. When I was like a teenager, my family had little dogs, Australian terriers. And like, I think you should still train your little dogs, but I really came to realize the importance of training big dogs, especially dingoes.
Mm.
Like it's the best thing for their own welfare and also just your relationship with them. Just things like making them sit before you give the food, making them sit before they go in.
Yeah.
Don't let them in because they're tapping on the door, because otherwise they'll just always do that.
Yeah.
And because they had so many dogs and dingoes here, which I started to referring to the collective as the ding dogs, they had to do like crate feeding with each of them to make sure that each of them gets their share of food without someone else stealing it, right?
As in they have to be like shut in a crate while they eat. So they're sort of alone eating in a crate.
Yeah, because otherwise they would maybe be fighting over food or somebody might not get their fill because someone else will come and steal it.
Mm.
And all things like that are a long kind of training process to get them used to being in the crate, understanding the crate as like a place of safety and stuff. So I've got as one of my dot points, could you adopt a dingo? and so I want to explain because in some ways they have similar needs to dogs, but in other ways it's different.
Mm.
So dingoes actually go pretty well with like large breeds of dogs. They say that like toy breeds are not great with dingoes because they might get hurt, but it's not in 100% of cases. Some dingoes, like I can't speak for every dingo here because they're all different. Like I said, there was also a cat here and some of the dingoes got along really well with the cat, but apparently some of them had to be kept away from the cat because they couldn't trust them.
With the smaller dogs, is it like a prey drive thing? Will they sort of look at them like a prey and...
They might do, but I also just think like sometimes the dogs and dingoes might have like little scuffles. That's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But if it's a little dog, they can get really like messed up in that situation. So it's just not safe for the little dog.
Yeah, they're not big enough to look after themselves without getting seriously hurt.
Yeah. Basically. So there was a bit of like, you know, ding dog politics to manage here. Oh, so I was talking about like the needs of a dingo. So compared to a dog. So like we said, you know, if you've got guests coming over to your house, you would need to pre-warn them about the dingoes. You know, you can't just pat my dog like you would with any other dog. You've
like
got
the Casper rules. I know all about it.
Yeah.
Give them the Casper rules. Give them the dingo rules.
And also, I wouldn't leave a dingo alone in your house while you're going to work or something because they will rip up everything. Dingoes like to bite things. They like to chew things up. It was kind of like... In some ways, it was like living with a toddler. Like if you leave something lying around, it's like, oh, you're going to have a dingo puppy chewing on that in a second if you're not careful. So you could, like you can walk a dingo on a lead. Some people do have dingoes in suburban areas, but you need to have an outdoor enclosure of some kind with like a lot of enrichment and stuff. So definitely adopting a dingo is not for everyone. You need like quite a lot of preparation for that.
Mm.
But hey, if anyone's interested and you really think that you might be able to take it on, I recommend following the page called Defend the Wild. And that's actually Alex's organization. And they've got so much information about dingoes. And if you're seriously interested, you could send them a message. And they talk about with dingoes, you have to unsell them to sell them. So they really... make sure that people know what they're getting into if they're interested in adopting a dingo. And also, Zeph and Alex have done a lot of work like pre-training these dingo puppies. So they're really well prepared to go into loving homes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? Did they talk about it or how difficult it is to get someone to make a connection quickly to decide to adopt when you've got the dingo rules that you've got to go by? Like, because we had that with Casper. Like, when we had potential adopters that would come to see Casper would have to, you know, read them the Casper rules. And so then you've got someone that's coming to potentially adopt a dog, but they're not allowed to pat them. They're not allowed to look at them in the eyes. They're not allowed to do all these things that like help create that initial connection. And then it's really hard to get them to actually decide that they want to commit to this animal versus another one because they're just trusting that a relationship will develop in a couple of weeks or a month time.
Yeah, it's a bit of a leap of faith.
Did that
someone.
Happen with the dingoes or did she talk about that being an obstacle with...
Yeah, so I will say because Zeph is a professional dog breeder, trainer. That was a bad slip of the mouth. They have this like training fence area kind of at the front of the property. And because people were meeting them as puppies, the puppies are fine. They'll just run up to people. The puppies are affectionate.
Oh, okay.
But doing that with an already adult dingo would be quite difficult, I think.
Yeah.
So that's why it's much better to adopt them out when they're still puppies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Casper's now 6 years old, so it's tough. But when you're saying about people being potential adopters, is it location specific? Like, is there much opportunity for that in NAR, Melbourne?
This is an important thing that I should explain because there's different laws in different states about owning dingoes. So the place where Alex is staying is up in northern New South Wales, the Northern Rivers area. So it's not legal to have a pet dingo in Queensland.
Okay.
In Victoria, it's you need a permit only if they're a purebred dingo. Right. And most of these dingoes are not purebred. They would have some dog in them.
Ah.
And I feel like we should go to the break soon. But talking about purebred dingoes, it's a little bit of a controversy there.
Mm.
But maybe I'll get into that after we play the first song.
Yeah, let's do that.
So yeah, this first song, actually, when I had Sonia and Alex on the show a few months back, they had a lot of songs about dingoes, and I'm thinking they used up all the good dingo songs. but there's actually a lot of songs about dingoes. So I found one more. This one's a John Williams song, and it's a very simple kind of folk song, but it talks a bit about the role of the dingo in the ecosystem.
So we're playing all the B-grade dingo songs.
No, I don't want to say that. Anyway, this is Dingo by John Williamson.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science, and scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. I forgot to announce the show before us. That was Sally Goldner with Out of the Pan talking to Ollie Lawrence, a senior programmer for Melbourne Fringe Festival, talking about fringe and queer content.
Yeah, and we forgot to do the back announce because also the last song that she finished with was Hunters and Collectors. I can't remember the name of it now, but it was a Hunters and Collectors song.
All right, we'll do better next time.
We will.
But the song that you just heard from us was Dingo by John Williamson.
That's true.
Okay, so just before the break, we were talking about rescued dingoes and like the type of homes they would be able to go to. And I mentioned something about purebred dingoes.
Mm.
So dingoes can crossbreed with dogs. So there has been a bit of that happening in Australia. And there's a bit of misinformation about like, oh, they're not a dingo unless they're a purebred dingo, right? And I think I said something about this earlier. It's not really how much percentage of dog or dingo is in them. It's rather what role are they playing in the ecosystem.
Mm.
So if they're wanting to be around humans, then they're performing the role of a dog. But if they're wanting to live out in the bush, then they're performing the role of a dingo.
Regardless of the genetics sort of
thing. Yeah, exactly. So I think that's important to keep in mind. With some of the purebred captive dingo breeding they've been doing, apparently they've started selecting for friendlier dingoes, right?
Oh my God.
So then it's kind of like, well, are these ones even wild animals anymore, even if they're quote unquote pure dingo, right? Yeah. So talking more about adopting the dingoes. So two of the puppies found homes while I was there. Creek has gone to live with a guy who's very passionate about dingoes. I think their family was also maybe dog trainers as well, so they're probably well set up to take on a dingo.
Yeah.
And Rain actually has flown to Western Australia to go and live with some Aboriginal rangers and is going to be doing ecological work on country over there.
Wow.
So he's going to be Ranger Rain.
That's cool.
Yeah. And, you know, one other threat that's facing the dingoes, when we had Alex on the show last time, we talked a little bit about 1080 poison.
Yeah.
And when Rain is doing his ranger work, he might have to wear a muzzle so that he doesn't eat 1080.
Yeah.
So there's just threats for dingoes everywhere, you know. Mm. It's hard for them out there.
So it doesn't really matter geographically in Australia where someone is if they want to adopt dingoes, or are there sort of more places?
So can't do it in Tassie, can't do it in Queensland.
Right.
Can't remember all the laws off the top of my head, but I think the other states are okay.
Yeah.
So Victoria, as long as they're not a pure dingo, which these ones aren't.
Yeah.
WA is fine. Yeah, I don't want to say the wrong things, I think the other states are mostly fine.
But other than the state laws, it's just about the common sense, like if you've got enough space and that sort of thing. Like, it doesn't really matter if you're in the country or in the city or in a suburb or whatever, like as long as you've got enough space and the ability to...
Yeah, and like I said, Zeph and Alex will talk you through all those things and they'll make sure that you're able to do this. They won't just adopt these dingoes out to any old person who's interested.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the dingoes will come already de-sexed, already vaccinated and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of work done on them. So they're ready to go into homes.
It was interesting what you said before about like how people are trying to like that argument about purebred versus when that, because I get the feeling that people who see dingoes as pests are trying their hardest to recategorize all dingoes as wild dogs anyway.
Yep, that's exactly what they're doing, because they call the pest control like wild dog control.
Yeah.
And this wild dog terminology, this is something Alex mentioned when she was on the show last time. People think that there's a population of wild dogs in this country in the same way that there's like wild cats, feral cats, but the wild dogs are actually dingoes.
Yeah.
Like people have done genetic tests on them. And they're dingoes.
Yeah.
But they call them wild dogs so they can get away with killing them, right?
And so maybe that's also related to this whole discussion about purebred or not, because then it just makes it easier to define all these dingoes that aren't purebreds. Well, we shouldn't call them dingoes. We'll call them wild dogs because they're not pure dingoes anymore. And that just makes it easier to other them and to either kill them or consider them pests.
Yeah, definitely. So while we're on the topic of talking about the threats to dingoes, something that I found out about really recently, like I just found out about this, we actually have a dingo fence in Australia. And it's a really long fence. It's 5,600 kilometers long. And that makes it the longest fence in the entire world.
In the world.
Which is pretty crazy. I didn't know about it right here in this country. Yeah. And it's kind of, it runs through South Australia, New South Wales and Queensland. So it kind of encircles like the bottom southeast third of Australia.
Yeah. I mean, people, hopefully if you do a Google search, you should be able to find an image that shows where the fence goes. But imagine starting, you know, somewhere near southeast Queensland and from on the coast, and then sort of going west, but going southwest across sort of near Dubbo, like near the middle of New South Wales, and then going down to the very top of, like near the top corner of Victoria, so near Mildura or something, but still not quite hitting Victoria.
It doesn't go through Victoria at all.
No, but sort of aiming in that direction, sort of going down towards on the way to Adelaide sort of thing, just to give people an idea of which way the fence is going. So, because a lot of people might say it's east-west or north-south, but it's sort of, it's diagonal. It's like, it goes all over the place, but it's essentially, if you even it out, it's sort of, from southeast Queensland to South Australia, going through New South Wales, and it sort of cuts off that corner of Australia.
Yeah, and you can actually see it from space. You have to zoom in a little bit, but I found a few places where you can follow the dingo fence. So the purpose of the dingo fence, I believe that they finished building it in the 1950s, and it was basically to keep the dingoes out of sheep country.
Right.
So it's kind of for the wool industry. You know, I was sort of joking to Trev before that I just feel like everything comes back to the wool industry.
In this country, it seems to.
Yeah, but even in other countries, like countries like England and Scotland, where we sort of came from, had a lot of problems with the wool industry as well. And so it's kind of become this interesting and like horrifying ecological experiment of like what happens when you entirely cut this continent in half and control dingoes on one side and not on the other. And when they're eradicating an apex predator from an ecosystem, have you heard of the term trophic cascade?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like if you take away one part of the food chain, like you remove the apex predator, then everything goes out of balance.
Yeah.
So there start to be too many herbivores. So then there's overgrazing happening and then the herbivores kind of start starving.
Yeah.
So it just throws everything out of balance. And that's kind of what's happening with the lack of dingoes on our side of the fence, I guess. And there's cats and foxes tend to be in higher populations where there's no dingoes.
Right.
Because dingoes kind of control the movement of cats and foxes a little bit, and they won't be as dominant in areas where there's dingoes. So
I heard kangaroos are also in larger numbers when there's no dingoes.
Yeah, definitely. Because kangaroos are dingoes' main food source, I believe, like in the wild. But dingoes will eat other animals too. I think dingoes will tend to eat the animals that there's a lot of, which makes sense because that's putting the ecosystem in balance if there's too many of one type of herbivore, right? Whereas cats won't eat kangaroos, I don't think. Cats only are preying on small mammals, small native mammals mostly.
Yeah.
Actually, I was listening to a different podcast recently. Apparently, a bunch of cats got released into the Nullarbor at one point to try and control rabbits, and the cats just didn't go for rabbits at all. They just went for native mammals. So, good one, guys. Yeah. Yeah, so the main threat to dingoes is, unsurprisingly, animal agriculture, right?
Yeah.
So, dingoes are being hunted and shot by mostly sheep and cattle farmers. Yeah, so dingoes... The laws around protecting them are kind of complicated because I think at one point they were like considered a threatened species that needed to be protected, but then they kind of got unprotected in a lot of areas. And I know in like parts of South Australia, for example, there's like a bounty on killing dingoes. I think it's $120 per dingo something. So a lot of dingoes have been killed in that way. And this dingo fence, it runs through some really remote parts of Australia. Mm. So actually there's a good article from ABC about this. Me and Trev both read it, and it was saying in some of these areas it's so remote that the only like occupation for people is either in related to sheep grazing or maintaining the dingo fence.
Yeah, that's literally all there is to do there.
Yeah, so you know, it's taxpayer money going to maintain this,
and they said it costs $10 million every year to maintain this fence.
Oh wow, well great. Yeah,
and so I'm also wondering, because all of Victoria is in the southeast version or section that this is fenced off. Like all of Victoria exists in that. So does that mean in Victoria any dingoes are supposed to be like eradicated, like technically, to keep that side of the fence clear of dingoes since all of Victoria
is in? Yeah, so there's a few complicated things, because in national parks, it's like they become dingoes when they're in national parks. But if they step foot outside the national park, suddenly they're a wild dog.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like there's certain places where dingoes are protected, but obviously dingoes are trying to go everywhere.
Yeah.
So if they step foot on someone's property, like they might be killed.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and they're still laying 1080 poison in Victoria.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was sort of wondering, like, you might not know the answer, of course, but I was wondering in my head when I was reading that and when you're talking, is do dingoes encountered on the northwest side of the fence, do they sort of get away with more than dingoes encountered on the southeast side, because that's where they're supposed to not exist, if you know what I mean? That's the whole purpose of the fence, is to keep all the dingoes on the northwest side.
Mm.
And I was just wondering if that means that do they get killed more often on the southeast side, which is the Victorian side?
Yeah, I think that that's the side where they're specifically killing dingoes.
Yeah.
But my understanding is along the fence itself, there's quite a lot of threats for dingoes. Like there's a lot of poison and stuff like along the length of the fence.
Yeah.
So dingoes will try to get through from both sides and, you know, encounter dangerous things. I also heard, so like apparently it's a bit of a job to patrol this dingo fence, because you can imagine it gets damaged all the time.
Mm.
And apparently animals will just run straight into it, like emus or kangaroos will just smash themselves into it at full speed. And sometimes they might break through and sometimes they don't. So it must be really confusing for them, like this big barrier. Why is it here?
That's horrible.
Yeah.
But, well, I was just going to say that, yeah, so in reading the article, it said that the fences are only about like a normal human head height, like 1.7, 1.8 meters tall, which is like about 5'6" or 6 foot tall. And they think that dingoes could jump over it if they really wanted to, but they don't.
Mm.
Maybe they're a bit scared to climb wire fences. They prefer to just continually hunt around the perimeter looking for ways that they can get through at ground level, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard that too. Apparently dingoes are not bad at climbing, actually. So
right.
They probably could get over the fence. But I guess it's like a lot of effort for them. So maybe they're just trying to see if there's
maybe
an
they feel vulnerable
way.
When they're up high.
Yeah, it could be that.
Yeah. For some reason they don't climb it, even though they could.
Yeah. So I just wanted to read out one quote from this ABC article that we'll link it below. So many already arid areas enclosed by the fence are fast becoming too hot for sheep grazing, says Justine Phillip, a research fellow at Birmingham University in the UK. This means much of the fence may soon become redundant, but at the moment it's hard to do anything except graze sheep on the dry country inside the fence. These places are mostly crown land, Dr. Phillip explains, and you must be a grazier to take up a lease there. Sheep grazing is one of the only sources of income, because that's the only thing supported by the government. Another income source is maintaining the fence itself. It's collectively funded by graziers, local and state governments. And, you already said this, upkeep's $10 million a year. Yeah. But it, then it says, Dr. Phillip hopes governments will help communities transition from sheep grazing, especially where climate change is starting to make it impossible.
Mm.
So that's quite interesting. So, yeah, I will say in terms of dingoes in Victoria, I know that dingoes are particularly threatened in Victoria. I believe they think the population is like less than 3,000 or something. And when the populations are getting really low, you will start to get the dingoes kind of inbreeding with each other, yeah, and that causes problems. So actually two of the adult dingoes that Zeph and Alex have, they were wild born, same story, parents were killed, and they think that these dingoes might be a little bit inbred because right, they've got a few problems, like they're getting ear infections all the time and stuff like that. So yeah, just the less dingoes there are, the more dangerous it becomes for them. They become less resilient when they're inbreeding and stuff. Okay.
Did you want to have another break?
Yeah, let's maybe move on to the next song. So this song is by Emma Donovan and Liz Stringer. Emma Donovan is an Indigenous soul country singer, and Liz Stringer is a singer-songwriter based in Melbourne. So this song is called Change Is Coming.
Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. To find out more about our community lunches and programs, check out projectfreshstart.org.au. If I don't see
Yes, welcome back to Freedom of Species. The song you heard was Change Is Coming by Emma Donovan and Liz Stringer. And today it's myself, Trevor, and Betty, who's with me. Sorry, your mic was off. There you go.
Oh, hello. We've just been talking about dingoes, my experience staying with some dingoes. And we've also just been talking about the dingo fence and some of the threats that are generally facing dingoes in Australia.
And so the dingo fence, obviously radio, it's really hard to describe where it is, but it basically seems to try and cut off all the really fertile land on the southeast of Australia.
They call it sheep country.
Yeah. So it's like when you look at the fence, it's pretty much everything on the northwest side of the fence, the other side of the fence, is all the semi-arid desert areas where it's really hard to grow things. And then everything on the southeast side where they have the sheep and where they're trying to keep the dingoes away from is on that really fertile area of ground where it's easier to grow things. And I was just saying in the break that it's funny because, like, you know, Betty already mentioned that having the dingoes absent from the ecosystem has all these negative effects on the ecosystem. Like there's animals that start either, you know, increasing in population numbers or decreasing in population numbers as a flow on from that predator not being in the environment. And so obviously, you know, there becomes more of their food becomes available, and that means that less of their food's food becomes available, if that makes sense, because what they would eat no longer gets eaten. And so then they explode in numbers, and then what that animal then eats gets really diminished in numbers. And so, and that sort of goes on and on. That's that trophic cascade that Betty was saying. But it also happens for plants as well. It's not just with animals. So it can affect the what sort of plants are growing in which areas and which ones go close to extinction or get threatened and which ones become overabundant and become almost like pests or weeds.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, the other side of that is, so that's all affected by the dingo. All those things I just said is if the dingo's there, it's under control. When the dingo is not present, these things go out of whack. But then on top of that, you've got these areas where there are no dingoes. You've also got the sheep. And the sheep are an introduced species that aren't supposed to be in Australian ecological sort of areas. And they've got their own problems that, you know, their hoof feet are not good for the fertile land, and it makes it really hard to keep it fertile, and it compacts the soil and all that sort of thing. And it's just this double-edged sword. Like, both ways is really
not attacking. To mention the land clearing that has to happen to put the sheep there in the first place.
So it's all these things are making basically that dingo-proof fence, or that dingo fence, everything on the southeast side has got these two or three different ways that it's getting damaged. It's getting damaged by no dingoes, it's getting damaged by the presence of sheep, and it's getting damaged from the land clearing before putting the sheep there.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, a huge problem that is happening all on this side of the fence, like our side of the fence, so to speak, in Victoria.
Yeah, so that's a good point. And something I realized I should mention about this, because, you know, as vegans, we're like against animal agriculture. It would be nice for it to end, but that's probably not going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah.
But dingoes are threatened right now and their populations are really at risk. So one of the things that, you know, my dingo advocate friends kind of push for is non-lethal management strategies. And that is mostly like flock guardian animals.
Yeah.
So they can use certain breeds of dogs, or they can actually use donkeys, which I don't know much about donkeys. I didn't know they were so tough that they could protect a flock of sheep or something.
Just to spell it out for people. So what we're talking about is, because the dingo fence is there to try and protect sheep from dingoes, and we're thinking if there are other ways to protect sheep from dingoes, because not that we want to encourage sheep farming, but it's a reality that we have to live with, that sheep farming is there, and the dingo fence is probably one of the worst ways to try and protect sheep. Maybe there's better ways to protect sheep that we have to.
So it's not just like the fence, compromise. It's also like the foot traps, the 1080 poison, all and the shooting. Yeah. All of this is legal for dingoes. Yeah. But if we had these flock guardian animals, which again, we're aware that it's another form of animal exploitation, so we don't love that.
Yeah.
But the situation with dingo populations is an emergency.
Yeah.
And animal agriculture is not going to be ending tomorrow.
Yeah.
But we need to stop the dingo from going extinct. So that's why we need to push for these non-lethal control methods.
Yeah. And alternative ways of protecting sheep from dingoes that doesn't result in dingoes being excluded from the environment or killed.
Yeah, exactly.
Is basically the aim. But unfortunately, not only does that support sheep agriculture, but it also may involve other exploitation of animals to be those protection animals.
But in the meantime, you know, you could always go vegan.
Yeah. That helps as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really good point. And like the article did mention there are specific breeds of dogs that can, was it the Marama dog?
Yeah. I don't know too much about dogs, dog breeds. But yeah, there's a few different types that can protect flocks of sheep, and they'll keep the dingoes away
and you're without saying donkey having to kill them as well, apparently.
Yeah. Which I'm curious to find out more about that, because I didn't know donkeys were so tough.
You were thinking they might even get attacked by a fox, by a dingo.
Apparently not. Yeah. So, all right, donkeys. yeah, okay, so we're coming up to the end. So actually, I just got back from my trip staying with the dingoes like a few days ago, and on my first night back in Melbourne, I actually went to an open mic poetry night down at Transcendence in Collingwood. Shout out to Transcendence. I think that's a fairly new venue, only opened in the last few years.
Cool.
And then the next morning, after like listening to some poetry, I kind of felt a bit inspired to just like, you know what, I want to write a poem about the dingoes that I met. So so here's my fresh poem about the dingo. And I've called this poem A Human in Wolf's Clothing.
Do you want me to put the John Williamson dingo softly underneath as like a background to the poem?
I think that because it has singing, it might distract me.
Okay.
But the poem is called A Human in Wolf's Clothing. And that kind of, like, I got that name from the idea that humans think that we're apex predators, right? But by building all these massive animal farms, we're actually displacing the real apex predators, like the wolves and, in the case of Australia, the dingoes.
Yeah.
So here we go. River, creek, rain and brook, you stole my heart from the very first look. A farmer shot your mother occupying dingo land, but before he drowned the puppies, a neighbour took a stand. Let me take them in, these sweet little guys. They've done nothing wrong, they don't deserve to lose their lives. So the neighbour took one, and the rescue took five, of which one found a home by the time I arrive. Four orphan dingoes I was able to meet, river, rain, brook and creek. apex predators native to this land, but they call you a pest because they don't understand. Out on country, in nature, it's the balance that you keep. You were here before they came with their cows and their sheep. In the land they came from, they made the wolf extinct for the British wool industry, if I'm to be succinct. The wolf never wore the sheep's clothes. No, that was us, and to grow the British Empire, it would never be enough. So they sailed and they landed on the lands of Gadigal, started clearing up the land, moving down to Darawal. They killed both mob and dingo as land claims they laid. Yes, it's all very sad, but there was money to be made. With colonial ambitions, it's the empathy they lack, and this nation would be built riding on the sheep's back. So dingo and thylacine don't have a place here anymore, and that brings me full circle to the story of these four. Creek, river, brook and rain. More people in this country should care of dingo's pain. Your mother was shot, but it could have been worse, like 1080 poison or a foot trap in the earth. Oh, and did you know those things aren't legal overseas? But we still use them here because we're the lucky country. Oi, 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 water finders and seekers. That's how you got your names. Brook, creek, river and rain. Dear river, I wish that I could take you somehow, but sadly right now, my housing won't allow. Rain went on a plane bound for WA with some First Nations rangers is where he will stay. He's gonna be a ranger, so we call him Ranger Rain, and we're so proud of him, but the credit I won't claim. And Creek has found a home where she can love and play and run with a person who will treat her like the queen she will become. Last I checked, River found no forever home just yet, and for Brook the perfect home he also has not met. Could you adopt a dingo in this economy? But first you need to know that it's a big responsibility, because dingoes, they are wild, they're not meant to be a pet. The ecosystem needs them, and that's what we can't forget. But their lives took a turn since their mother is dead. So now these four must live with us humans instead. But somewhere out there, wild dingoes still roam. On mountain, desert, forest, this land is their home. And their story, it's not over, it could still change track. But if dingoes disappear, they will never come back. Thank you.
That was great.
Oh, thanks, wow. Trev.
Yeah, like, that was fantastic.
Thanks for your applause.
Yeah. I was impressed.
Yeah. So my poems are pretty, like, I'm not much of a poet, but when I write them, I just like to make them like a storytelling type thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the stories of the dingoes I met, and I was really moved by their story. So yeah, and I guess you guys got a lot of context before you heard my poem as well. So
yeah, that made a lot of sense.
Yeah, so we must be coming up to the end by now.
We've got about a minute and a half left of the show.
Yeah, so...
Which was a great way to end, by the way, that poem. I'm glad you got to squeeze it in. That was great.
Yeah, I just was going to do it if I was feeling it. Yeah, so the last song I'm going to play, it's actually kind of a silly one. It's not, like, super relevant. It's an old song from the 60s.
Mm.
And it's by Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. And it's called Lil Red Riding Hood. And I just chose this one because it's got a line in it about, like, being a wolf in sheep's clothing. So
yeah,
that's the only reason I chose it. It's not that deep. But
yeah. Right. Well, I think it's been a really good chat about dingoes. There's a bit of a follow-up to the previous one. It's really important to, like, I guess, because it is so specific to our country.
Yeah.
To be talking about and keeping, you know, keeping these things front of mind. Like, it's
and I don't know about you. Continent. But, like, before I started talking to Alex, I knew very little about dingoes.
Yeah.
So it's been really informative for me. And now I feel like it's an important issue to know about because they kind of are our continent's only native apex predator.
Yeah.
So it's really important to protect them.
It is. So we're going to finish up. As you heard, the last song is going to be that song by Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. But yeah, this is Freedom of Species. We're on 1 till 2 o'clock every Sunday afternoon on 3CR. And up next is Rotations. They're going to be playing some music for the afternoon. And Freedom of Species will be back after Out of the Pan next Sunday. So thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Ow! Who's that I see walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.